morning to you. Tuesday morning, Keith filling in with you on 12 midday. Today we're looking at the new oncology unit that's opening in University Hospital Galway. Today also we're looking and speaking with the pro-life people following a major march which took place in Dublin yesterday. We're also looking at the electoral boundaries on today's programme. Some good news coming in from Merlin Park Hospital from the Chief Whip, Hildegard Nocton, and much more between now and 12 midday. Comment lines are quite simply open if you do want to get through to us. You can do so on 086 38 33 553 with thanks to Rationale Windows and Doors. Or you can simply call us at 091 77 0077. It's Tuesday. Delighted to be with you right through until 12 midday. And a very good morning to you. All those comment lines are open, or you can email comments at galwaybayfm.ie if you want to get in contact with us. And if you think I've got a cold or otherwise, I don't. Would you believe it's hay fever? I'm getting it very bad this year for the first time ever, I think. I just have hay fever, so I'm on Telfast, and it does keep it at bay. So if I sound a little bit croaky or horsey, I'm fine. I even did an antigen test yesterday. But do you know what I had to do? Just to be sure, and it was negative. I had to read the instructions. It's you kind of have to remind yourself, is it one line or two lines? Or what is it? But anyway, it's the one constant line. But I did the antigen test yesterday. And by the way, we'll be speaking about the Merview programme, which we did last Friday. It was absolutely fabulous. I listened back to it over the weekend, and we got a massive response to it. An absolutely massive. And we're in tune this coming Friday morning. Further details on that as the day progresses. It's a long time coming, but it's here right now. The new oncology unit in University Hospital Galway is in place, and I was walking in that general area recently, and I saw all the equipment and all the beds and all the chairs in place, but it's a long time coming. Let me go there to Richard Flaherty, Chief Executive of Cancercare West. Their house indeed in Inishevan is right beside it, so those that will be staying there in Inishevan and going for treatment won't have that far to go. But staff at the new oncology unit in Galway have begun treating the first cancer patients to use the facility. The centre serves the west and northwest, and it's going to open on a phased basis over the coming years. And Richard joins me on the line. Richard, good morning to you.
Good morning, Keith.
It's a long time. It's a long, long, long time coming. But look at. Isn't it great that it's here now?
Oh, I think it's going to be a game changer for cancer patients in the west of Ireland. We're delighted to see it open. It's over, long overdue, but it's here now. And we think it's going to have a huge impact for cancer patients all over the west of Ireland. You mentioned Inishevan there. It's right adjacent to the new unit. So our patients, 33 of them, every night that stay with us, can walk literally, you know, 1 minute will get them from their rooms to the treatment centre. And, you know, even for the patients staying with us, that's going to be huge and have a huge positive impact, because before, trying to direct them even to the current radiotherapy centre in the hospital was difficult to find, difficult to locate, and that's not the case now. So we're really delighted with this new facility opening.
It's state of the art. I peeped in the windows. I don't know much about the equipment in question, but there was an awful lot of chairs, like dentist chairs and lights and all of that. So that's to benefit the patient and to make them more comfortable when they're going on this journey.
Well, I got a tour of the facility along with our staff at Inishevan, and it really is, you know, jaw-dropping, the building itself in terms of its layout. There's two reception rooms. We will have a desk in the main reception here at Cancercare West where we can offer advice and information about our services, which is, we feel, is great as well for our patients and the patients in the west of Ireland. And even the treatment bunkers, it's state-of-the-art, the machines that are going in there. No expenses spared. As I say, I think For patients, it's a great day for cancer patients in the west of Ireland that they'll have this state-of-the-art facility opening for them. It's really is a beautiful building and beautifully laid out. The colours, a lot of thought and expense has gone into this. And we're delighted that the patients will get to experience something like this in a very difficult period of their life. This will make that bit easier.
It's an 8,000 square meter building, with six radiotherapy treatment vaults, four of which will be operational by the end of the year, and all of machines that feature linear accelerator technology to improve imaging and allow for more precise targeting of the cancer in question. In turn, this can help to reduce side effects as well.
Yeah, and you know, currently there's 3 linear accelerators in operation at the hospital, so going up immediately to 4, and that's really, you know, to meet the increasing demand that's coming down the road for cancer treatment, the cancer diagnosis. It's going to increase steadily over the next few years. So to move it up from 3 to 4 immediately is great. These new machines will break down less often, because unfortunately the older machines that were there would be issues from time to time. You can imagine that they are going, you know, 5 days a week, from early morning to the afternoon, difficult to keep them going in service. So these new machines will be more precise, obviously operate better, would be able to see more patients through and targeted treatments. All that is great news for cancer patients.
And is there going to be an official opening, Richard, can I ask you?
I would think, Keith, there probably will, but as you said, there'll probably be a soft opening, because I suppose they're in a difficult situation where they'll have to keep the current radiotherapy unit open in the hospital, and then kind of merge over and blend over, staff has to be moved over and patients over. So I'd say they'll have a soft opening where they'll gradually, I think 4 patients was the initial number that were going to be moved over to the new facility at the beginning, and then that would merge over, and eventually it'll transition over from the current facility to the new facility. So I'd say I haven't heard of an opening date, but I think they'll probably want to manage that transition before they'll probably open it. But I'm sure it's worthy of a very significant opening in terms of the facility itself.
Absolutely. And I know that Minister Stephen Donnelly is coming into Galway very shortly in the coming week. So he may want to have a little view around it. It just shows, though, I mean, by the work the Cancer Care West have done and others, and the internally, I mean, I remember a long number of years ago, some of the consultants that are now retired asking and demanding that this be put in place. But like all infrastructure, it takes time.
It does, and I think they ran into some problem when they were building it, of the construction part of it. All that takes time. And I suppose when you walk into the building and you see the scale of it, you kind of say, yeah, this is a huge project. And, you know, we can look back in the past as we want it, but I think we're very much looking forward to the future now. It's here. You know, let's be positive about it. It is a game changer. It's going to make a huge difference to people who use the facility. And even, you know, in terms of a cancer patient currently in the new unit, it's a very cramped waiting room down in GUH, whereas now you're going to an open area. It's naturally lighted. Just to be able to sit in the waiting room in a facility like that, you know, that is very modern, new and bright, that's got to have a positive impact on patients as well. So, you know, yeah, we would have liked it 10 years ago, but it's here now, and we've got to be grateful that it's here and celebrate the fact that it's opening.
Well, as you and I said, let's look forward. Now, there's no point in looking back. What happened yesterday happened yesterday. What happened 10 years, 20 years ago, that's gone. Let's look forward. And it's for the next generation. And it's for those that haven't been diagnosed yet, or that those that are perhaps being diagnosed in the coming days, weeks and months ahead, that they can have full confidence. Not that they couldn't have in the service. The service was underground, difficult to get to. But again, the staff within it were magical. They really were.
And I'm delighted for the staff as well, Keith, because it gives them a facility that they can come into and be proud of.
Daylight. It gives them daylight, so it does, and not shifting from ward to ward. The other good part of this is I do like the fact that Cancer Care West are going to have a presence within the reception room area there. I think that's important, because an awful lot of people have questions that they don't know who to ask the question of.
And the nature of radiotherapy, Keith, is someone's going to there for 6 to 8 weeks, Monday to Friday, and our intention is they'll be sitting in that waiting room, they'll see our desk, they might not go up on the first or second day, but by week 2 or 3, they may need help or support, be it our support centre on Seamus Quirk Road, all the services and the supports that are available there, just to be able to tell them that, you know, close by, if you're struggling, and we can help, the facility is there. And also the signpost in Yeshivan as well, because sometimes people don't know about that facility or can't take it in on the first week when the treatment has started. So we're delighted to be able to have a presence there, to be able to just signpost and highlight our services to people who need it most.
Richie, thank you. Richard Flaherty, thank you for joining us today. Chief Executive of Cancer Care West on the opening of the new oncology unit. And again, well done to all involved in that, to everybody from the staff involved. I mean, it was difficult circumstances they were in down at the oncology unit down in just off the old ED department there. So hopefully it'll be slow, but they will transition over. And the win-win on this is going to be the patients and future patients on this. It's 9:20, short commercial break. And a major march took place in Dublin yesterday. We'll go into that next.
Galway Talks, in association with Tesco. Click and collect allows you to collect your order whenever suits you.
Hey, very good morning to you. Welcome into today's programme. Don't forget, I just heard in the ad break there, I should have mentioned it at the top of the programme, that if you fancy winning the car and the other prizes for grabs in the Galway Hospice Foundation car draw, you can do so by just picking up the phone right now and ringing 091-770-868, and you can buy it over the phone from there. That's 091-770-868, and that car draw is taking place this week, later this week. But if you want to get your name in, you can do so. Great value and a great chance to get yourself a brand new Kia car. 091-770-868. Now, thousands attended a March for Life in Dublin yesterday, which was held in response to the extreme recommendations contained in the government-backed report on the three-year review of the abortion law. The marchers walked from St. Stephen's Green to Leinster House, where speakers took issue with the government for allowing the review to focus on certain aspects. Now, Galway native and pro-life campaigner spoke at the event. Eilish Mulroy joins me on the line. Eilish, good morning to you. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on the programme, Keith. How are you?
No problem at all. What are you concerned about in this regard?
Well, look, the abortion review report was an opportunity for the government to look at how the law was operating. It was mandated by the legislation that was introduced back in 2019. That, you know, you take an objective look at how the law is operating. And there are huge, obviously huge issues with the law. But one of the massive things that's happened, I think that nobody would have expected, is that we have these really, really high abortion rates. And you'll remember before the abortion referendum, the Taoiseach and other senior members of government gave assurances that, you know, in fact, people who were on the no side were accused of kind of scaremongering for saying that the abortion rates would rise dramatically. But I don't think anybody anticipated that we'd have nearly 30,000 abortions in the first 4 years of the abortion law. So the Minister for Health confirmed last week, or 2 weeks ago on the radio, that we had 8,500 abortions in 2022 alone. That's one baby being aborted for every seven babies being born. And I think no matter if you were a yes voter or a no voter back in the referendum time, nobody would have anticipated that. So there's no mention in this report, the government review, about looking for ways to reduce those abortion numbers. There's no mention in the review about offering better supports for women in unplanned pregnancy and positive alternatives to abortion. And that's why we had, and in fairness, we were very surprised by the numbers in Dublin yesterday, thousands of people marching from St. Stephen's Green to Leinster House to make the point to government that, you know, this isn't good enough, women deserve better than this, and that it is going to become an election issue. And I think that, you know, the report was very one-sided. The process around how this report was done by government was flawed. And the recommendations are just really a travesty and a betrayal of women and unborn children.
But up to when it was legalised in Ireland, there was a significant amount of people going abroad for abortions. It's now in the country, and you're saying that 30,000 abortions have been carried out over the past 4 years. And you've given us stats then for last year as well. But would those people have gone abroad if it was still not legalised in this country?
So the last figure, yeah, so you make a good point. There were people travelling abroad. We had very detailed figures because the British the Department of Social Care for England and Wales keeps figures of women who travelled from Ireland. And the last numbers we had, so for the year 2018, before the abortion legislation came in, was about 2,800. So you're still talking about a 200%, or more than that, increase, nearly 200% increase from that to the 2022 figures. But that's also bear to, you know, what we have to do there is bear in mind to what the government were saying. They were saying this wouldn't happen. There was also other assurances the government gave, like we've heard a lot in recent days about this proposal to remove the three-day period of reflection for women. So just to explain to listeners, when a woman goes for the first appointment, she then waits 3 days before the abortion actually happens. And this report is recommending to scrap that. Now, we know that from parliamentary questions sent in from TDs that nearly 4,000 women have availed or have not gone back for the second appointment. That's not to say all of those women changed their minds. There could be other reasons too, but thousands of them did. So there are people listening to this programme and to radio programmes all over Ireland this morning who have babies in their arms as a result of that 3-day wait. And we know, like, it's so important to take time when we make, you know, making big decisions, we encourage our families, everybody around us to take time. So the idea of removing the 3-day wait, I think it would be, it's just really, really scandalous. It's really a travesty. And really, you know, I think that a lot of the recommendations of this report are very extreme. It's not surprising to us, given the way that the whole process has been carried out. The minister only met with pro-abortion campaigning organisations, organisations like the National Women's Council, who are calling for abortion up to late term, and didn't meet with even his own pro-life parliamentary colleagues, let alone pro-life organisations. So I think it's been a flawed process from the beginning. So in that sense, what has come about as a result of it is not surprising. But I think any effort by government to try and push this kind of legislation to widen the abortion laws even more than they already are will be robustly challenged if any attempt is made to put them through their office.
I'll come back to that in one moment, Eilish Mulroy, but can I just put it to you that to make a decision to have an abortion in this country is a huge decision for a woman to make, for a family to make, for a couple to make. It's a massive decision for them. It's a life-changing decision for them. But it's their decision.
You know, Keith, one would think that that's the case, but actually there's an awful lot of women who make a decision to have an abortion. It's not their decision. They're coerced. They feel pressured. They're worried about school and college. I've spoken to people who, you know, people who are under pressure financially, and you know, they get in touch. You know, what can I do? I really want to have this baby, but my partner has abandoned me. And this is the problem. This is quite, you know, as if, you know, we're not hearing the lived experiences of women. Women get in touch with us all the time who've been through abortion, who feel like they weren't given a chance, who wished somebody offered them help, wish somebody offered them financial support or told them about their legal, their legal rights. Mm. Nobody did. So the government-funded My Options helpline that you ring at the moment, it only goes one way. And what's happening is people are ringing that helpline, they're not hearing about alternatives to abortion, and then they're going ahead with this decision, which many women regret, and those voices are also not heard. And those voices are not being consulted and weren't consulted by the government when they were carrying out this review. And that's why it's so one-sided. So there's so many perspectives, and I think that it's really important that all of the perspectives are at the table, and all of the, you know, all of the different issues. There was an Irish Examiner report last year from Niamh Griffin about a woman who was forced into a room and coerced and forced to take abortion pills. And yet there's no media outcry around that. So what about that woman? So that woman's experience is not worth less than any other woman's experience. So I think if the government had done a proper job in this review, they would have taken all of those perspectives on board and come up with a very different document than what we've seen last week.
And your argument also is that the minister did not sit and meet with the pro-life campaign people, including yourself, to get your views on this before publishing this.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not that, of course, the pro-life campaign requested a meeting. We didn't get one. You know, I wouldn't mind that if he was actually meeting other people, if he was meeting, you don't have to be a pro-life person to think that one baby being aborted in every 8 pregnancies is too much. He didn't meet his own parliamentary colleagues who requested meetings with him. He met with the National Women's Council, the IFPA, the Coalition to Repeal the 8th Amendment, all this kind of clique of very, you know, these are organisations that are looking for abortion up to late term that do not represent the mainstream at all. He met with those, the people who carried out the research. The biggest piece of research that informed the 3-year review report was carried out by a Trinity researcher called Catherine Conlon, who herself was on record as being in favour of repeal. She called for the removal of the 3-day period of reflection, yet didn't interview one woman who availed of it. So you can see how you're going to get one result when you only have a very one-sided approach. And that's all on the record. That's all out there.
Yeah.
All of the information about who we met and who we didn't meet has all come to light because of parliamentary questions, not because the minister has been publishing it, but because people have been asking questions, which goes to show how important it is to do that. And well done to the TDs who are doing it.
Finally,
so the whole process is fairly flawed and biased. And I mean, really, if anybody looks at it in any detail and interrogates it at all, that's very clear to see.
Finally, Eilish, if the minister rang you this morning and said, look, you have 15 minutes of my time, what would the key message be to Minister Stephen Donnelly?
I would say, Minister, you know, please do something to help and assist those women who actually are in planned pregnancy and would like to hear about, you know, how they might be able to have their baby. Let no woman feel she has to have an abortion because she can't afford it, or because she's afraid of her partner, or because she's been coerced, or she's worried about her education. The minister, the most important thing he could do is try to help women, and that would, by default, reduce the abortion numbers, which I think all of us would agree with, no matter what our position on the substantive issue of abortion or how we voted in 2018. I think everyone agrees abortion is not a good thing, and everyone agrees that women should receive all the necessary help they need in unplanned pregnancy.
For a live campaigner and spokesperson, Eilish Mulroy, thank you for joining us this morning. Now, if you want to get in contact with us, you can do so on WhatsApp on 086 38 33 553 with your comments. Can I give you some of the comments from Friday's programme? Because we were in Merview, and thank you to all of the wonderful team in Flannery's Hotel. But some of the comments that we got in are just quite amazing. Keith, absolutely brilliant show on Friday morning last. I listen in here daily across the pond. I get up at 4 a.m. to listen to your program. It was great to hear the wonderful stories growing up at Merview, Keith. Such a gentleman, with Maureen Gillen, Mr. Chick Gillen. Thank you for the lovely stories, and RIP Chick. Thank you for reciting your beautiful party piece, which we're going to play again today, by the way. Maureen did a beautiful party piece, and I've listened to it a few times over the weekend, and we're going to play it again today. Hopefully next time I'm home from across the pond, we'll meet you at the usual place at the club. Much love to you all and all the ladies. So proud to have grown up in Merview. Happy, simple, caring for each other every day. And that comes from a Pierce Avenue person today. Another caller said, great show, fantastic show on Friday. Lovely people to listen to. And what a great poem Mrs. Gillen had. Brilliant show, lovely bilingual poem. Our beautiful neighbours, this caller said, what a place to grow up. Pioneer Club Friday night, and I have the best memories of it. Keith, great to hear all the stories from different areas. Keith is brilliant at his job. Well done, GBFM. Well, now I was at home, as I am with all of those programmes, including Tune this coming Friday morning. I'll be at home there with people that I know so well. Enjoyed listening to all the stories, especially the lady who worked in the Royal Tara China factory. Keith, it was lovely listening to the ladies recounting their memories of earlier days. Didn't know any of them being from Mayo, but totally enjoyed hearing their stories, especially Mrs. Carrick lifting the pram over the wall to get to the shop. Great people, really enjoyed it. Brought back memories of great people in my own earlier days as well. Well done to all. Keith, I listened in on Friday morning and listened to the people who have lived through thick and thin and have great memories, and a lovely poem from Mrs. Gillen. Fantastic listening on Friday morning. Keith, fabulous to see photos of the lovely people that have joined the programme on Friday. And well done to everybody there. Deirdre said, there was great crack to be had with the competition between Old Merview and New Merview. Up New Merview, and that was by the Waxies. But we balanced it very well. You know, we just balanced it because I grew up with that kind of tension between old and new. And it wasn't tension. It was the newbies and the old people. But we balanced it extremely well. And I have to say that Pat Philbin did a tremendous job there as well. A great picture of lovely people. Looking great, Uncle Paddy. It was great to hear you on the radio. I was listening to Leslie, and she was excellent as well. So for those of you that enjoyed it, this is Maureen Gillen, the woman who cut my hair for the first time ever. She'll never live that one down. She had a poem and a party piece. And we asked her, would she do the party piece? And this is her party piece.
Or one fado in a little town in Carraro lived a Buhalma named Mihal Moore, an only son of 34. When work was done at end of day, he'd sit and drink his cup on tay. He never felt the need to stroll or find a goal. His intellectual needs were drawn from books like Peg and Isagon. And so it was, blean in, blean out, our Mihal never moved about. He dreamt of Collini, most men do, but he never aimed on digging to. Have you enough? Meanwhile, up on Balla Ortlea, a Colin Jass got a bright idea. When laying to Sierra came time came by, she thought that she would like to try Coach Otbiokun like Carrero. No foreign land, not far to go. And time to meet the native clan, and Bajor find herself a man. This Colleen Jass with eyes so blue was named in town as City Sue. This scarlet woman knows each trick. She's heading west, beware of it. The lights were on in the parish hall for the local folia wearers' ball. The Mihal Mount own, the Susie own, dressed in a most revealing gown. Our brave Cú Chulainn of the West, his hurling medals on his chest, exclaimed when City Sue came in Annam J, well, fair Gershin. Though nervous still, he took the chance. Cade Mila Falcher, will you dance? Golua on the floor they strut, cheek to cheek from head to foot. She whispered into Mihal's ear, H num now, we'll disappear. We'll take my room, the door's unlocked. You'll stay the night, Shomra hucked. Well, Mihal's kyan was in a spin, ni roushe thinking thos mor shin. He blessed himself, this Jezebel will surely damn his soul to hell. He stood aghast, could only stutter, and off he pedalled on his rower, and straight to Olya into bed, and decades of the rosary said. Ah, Mihal Bucht still sleeps alone in his lab of bug, a cone, a cone. He often dreams of Shomra Hucht, what might have been. Oh, Mihal Bucht.
What a lovely, just a lovely, lovely poem. We're going to have to find the origins of that and see if there's more like that. But she's an absolute lady. And just the comments are even coming in again today. And well done to all involved in that, including our own John Morley, who got out of there alive, I have to say, with all of his female fans following him around the place in a bus and with Zimmer frames and all that type of stuff as well. So well done. 9:39, we're back just after these.
Galway Tours, in association with Tesco. Find our award-winning Irish ranges in store and online at tesco.ie.
A very good morning to you now. Apparently there's a car crash on the motorway eastbound after the Athenry exit. Emergency services are at the scene, and we'll try and get an update on that for 10 o'clock news if we can, and all we'll find out what the situation is there. So car crash and the motorway eastbound after Athenry exit, and emergency services on the road there. Now, very good morning to you. Welcome into today's programme. We're going to look at the future of the Galway electoral area with the head of electoral operations, Tim Carey, because they're looking, the newly established Electoral Commission, and Commission Tuchjohn, is currently carrying out a review of all Dáil and European Parliament constituencies following the provisional results of the census in 2022. And Tim joins me on the line. Tim, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us today. In exciting times, how is this going to pan out, can I ask you? The newly established Electoral Commission is now looking at European, local and other elections. And how is this going to pan out for us?
Okay, so I suppose just by introduction, and Commission Tuchjohn was just established in February, so it's taken over a number of responsibilities, including, say, referendum information campaigns, misinformation and disinformation. But our first big job is this constituency review work. So I'm sure some of your listeners will be aware of this, but I think many won't, in that the constituencies in Ireland are reviewed every 5 years. And why is that? Because we have a census every 5 years. And literally, our TDs and the composition of our constituencies is a function of the population of the country. And in the last 5 years, the population has risen by over 300,000 people. Now, according to the Constitution, we need every 20 to 30,000 people in Ireland needs to be represented by a TD. Mm-hmm. So that's actually in the Constitution. That number is fixed. It's got to be somewhere between 20 and 30,000. But there's also another issue, is that in the Constitution, it also says that there needs to be a quality of representation. So it's not just that in Galway, you're represented by a TD represents 30,000 people, and in Wexford, it represents 20,000 people. It actually has to be more or less the same throughout the country. So that leads to a massive operation to redraw the boundaries to allow for this equality of representation. But what's really different this time is that we are going to see the biggest increase in the number of TDs since the 1980s. So currently we have 160 TDs. Mm-hmm. We will have between, and this is an absolute fact, we will have between 171 and 181 TDs. And that's set out in law. Now, the 171 is interesting. People say, might say, oh, that sounds like a lot. That's actually the minimum that the Constitution will permit. The maximum, incidentally, is 256. So the Commission has been tasked with redrawing the constituency boundaries to have a number between 171 and 181 with equality of representation around the country. So it's a challenge.
And is there a scientific way then of redrawing those boundaries, or do you move them a little to the left, a little to the right, or scientifically, is there a formula there?
There's not a formula. It's not something I think that you can just put out to artificial intelligence, because as we said, you know, as we say, these aren't just lines on the map. We're very aware that these are communities, and that a line on the map leads to different representations for someone. So there's a complex process that's been that's underway at the moment with all these spreadsheets and maps and looking at options. And I suppose the first port of call for the Commission is to try and solve problems. You know, so what opportunity is there to maybe fix a county boundary that had been breached in a previous constituency review, mm-hmm. or, you know, something? So that's really the first port of call. And it's to minimize, I suppose, disruption in the system. So that's one of the terms of reference. County boundaries is also a term of reference. And, you know, the breaching of county boundaries is taken quite seriously and is avoided wherever practical. But given the sort of mathematics that are involved, it's absolutely inevitable that county boundaries will be breached, because not every county has an exact equality of representation with other counties. So it is a challenge. And when we say it's not lines on the map, we're also looking for people to give us some feedback. So communities that feel, or people feel that they're aware of something on the ground that the Commission may not be aware of, in terms of, well, this could be done, or that could be done, or this hasn't worked, or, you know, we feel that we've been left out of our area, or whatever. We're open for public submissions until May the 10th. And our website, electoralcommission.ie, you can just log on to that, you'll find your way to it. And we will be giving our final report by the end of August. So August 30th, wow. That's legally when the Commission has to give their final report.
And can I ask you just, Tim Carey, about the quotas that you've quoted there? So we'll say that mm-hmm. Galway's had a significant increase, say Galway West, hypothetically. I know you can't tell me what's going to happen there yet. But if Galway West mm-hmm. had a significant increase, does that mean we could get one or two extra TDs in that area? And say Carlow or that general area had a massive reduction, would they have less representation in Dáil Éireann?
Well, everyone will have the same amount of representation. I think that's the thing that the Constitution says, so that you'll have the same amount of representation. Now, where it actually takes place is, you know, within a county boundary or not. But yes, it does follow population. So areas of the country that has more of a population increase will get more TDs. That's just, you know, that's just the mathematics of it. Exactly how that pans out on an individual basis within a county or within a constituency, you know, I can't go into, because we're still deliberating, to be honest. We're still open for submissions. So it's to try and strike that balance between, you know, redressing, you know, maybe county boundaries, having continuity across elections, because people don't like, I suppose, to be flip-flopped, every election being moved to another constituency. So there's a lot of issues at play. But I think it's interesting. I don't think a lot of Irish people are really aware of all these things that go on every 5 years. And this, because there's such a big increase, and that's because the number of TDs was held. It used to be, we'd have the maximum number of TDs according to the Constitution. That was up until the 1980s. And now we're at the minimum number of TDs according to the Constitution. But that's, you know, the system is really just kind of bursting at the seams. So there will be a dramatic change coming later on this summer.
So all you can do with your colleagues is to get the information together by the end of August, submit it from there, and then the decision has to be made. But constitutionally, the numbers will have to increase. Now, some would say there's an adequate amount of people in Dáil Éireann currently representing the country, because for every TD, there's going to be a cost. For every new TD or extra TD, there's going to be a cost. That's not your role, but it could make it quite expensive.
It will certainly increase costs. That's undoubtedly you're right. Every TD comes with, you know, administrative support, etc. So you know, that's it. That's just part of the system. There's nothing that we can do about it. We have to go to a minimum of 171 to remain within the constitutional framework. And another thing, just to kind of note, we've had a few submissions in so far asking for six seat constituencies to help solve the problem. But actually, according to the legislation, we can only do 3, 4, or 5 seat constituencies. So 6 seat constituencies are not in play. I think the last time that they happened in Ireland were in the 30s or 40s. But that's part of the legislation. So, you know, what I would say to people is, you know, in terms of, you know, assisting us, you know, with local knowledge about various constituencies, but to also give their impression of the overall way that this is done, because the Electoral Commission is not a one-off body. We're kind of here for the next 100 years, and the Commission will be doing their next constituency review in 5 years' time. So definitely we want to get learnings from it and to see what people's concerns and views are on the whole process. So that's an important part of our consultation as well.
So Tim, I suppose if they go to the website, they can have a look at that, and you've given us the website details there, and we'll again in a moment, so they can go and they can interact with them and all of that. But if I'm reading this right now, and correct me if I'm wrong here, you're saying that regardless of, once the findings have been put together and submitted, you're saying there will be at least 41 extra TDs in Dáil Éireann.
No, there would be an extra 11 TDs. So up from 160 to 161.
Okay, so an extra 11 would be the minimum there.
Yeah, and the maximum will be an extra 21.
Okay. It's interesting times, and certainly with all of the polls that were out of the weekend and who was doing what and who was not doing what and who's up and who's down and who's not moving at all, it's going to be very interesting, and a very interesting job for you. You must just love it, because it's the representation that people are looking for and the representation constitutionally that we have to have.
It's fascinating. You know, it is fascinating. And this is, you know, this is the fundamental building block of our democracy, which a lot of people just aren't aware of. So an important part of this is just telling people how we're doing this and why we're doing it. The website is electoralcommission.ie, and you'll very clearly find, you know, a way to make a submission or view other people's submissions. And there's also all those terms of references that I've just talked about in the constitutional things. They're all listed there, so you can have a look at that. And there's also a table showing the population of each constituency at the moment, and its average representation. Every county, every constituency in Ireland except for one is over the constitutional limit, and some are up to sort of 4,000 over 34,000. So, you know, it's kind of bursting at the seams in terms of representation. So that's where all this is kind of coming from.
And finally, Tim, will this be in place for the next general election?
We will be laying the report before the Oireachtas by the end of the summer. Yeah. It's obviously up to the Oireachtas whether they want to legislate for it. But the intention, the historical way that this has been done, and yes, that this would be in place before the next election.
Tim, interesting. Tim Carey, thank you so much for joining us this morning on the programme.
Thank you.
Now, I caught up with Tim just before coming on air today, so thanks to him for joining us. Fascinating, though, how many are we going to have in Galway West, Galway East, and Roscommon Galway? It's going to be interesting. Is Mayo still going to be part of Galway East? Let's just see from there. Now, can I just remind you that Self Help Africa, they're having their table quiz in Tom Sheridan's pub in Knocknacara today at 8:30 p.m. Now, Self Help Africa are having this table quiz tonight, 8:30 p.m. with proceeds going towards the charity work in drought-affected Ethiopia and Kenya in East Africa, and also with the aftermath of the cyclone Freddy in Malawi as well in Southern Africa. But if you're up for a table quiz challenge, tonight is it. And do you enjoy a good night out? Do you fancy answering questions from the quizmaster extraordinaire, Sean O'Line, who has put a huge amount of work into this, and he does each and every year. Self-Help Africa, supported by Tom Sheridan's pub in Akrakara, is hosting the quiz at 8:30 p.m. tonight. So please, hopefully as many of you as can go along, will go along. If you want to make contact with Ronan Scully in advance, you can do so. But we wish them every success tonight. They need our support. And they need our money as well, really and truly. And can we remind you that on Saturday morning next May the 6th, as part of Darkness into Light initiative in support of Pieta House, a Galway-based swimming community, Gentle Swimming, is hosting a dawn swim at the Big Beach in Salt Hill. Anyone who would like to support Darkness into Light is welcome to come along for what should be a unique experience, welcoming the dawn of a new day while exploring the beauty of being immersed in the ocean. Participants are invited to come along to the Big Beach at 5:30 a.m. to be in the water for 5:45 a.m. and to welcome the dawn at 5:55 a.m. A special book will be provided, and participants can write the names of loved ones in their memory as well. And a flame of light will burn brightly, and afterwards tea and treats will be served as well. Further details, so we have a telephone number for it here, and if you do want to get involved in it, you can just give us a call here and we can give you the mobile number from there. Now then, let's head towards the Galway FM News Desk for the 10 o'clock news. A busy second hour, including some great news from Merlin Park. Stay tuned for that and more to come between now and the end of today's programme. What a beautiful morning it is. Do stay with us right through until midday.
Galway Talks, in association with Tesco. Click and collect allows you to collect your order whenever suits you.